welcome to class today. Glad to see you all here. To start with, let's do the sad news. So, we grade tests using a system called TPEGS, which lets us grade very quickly, except it was kind of glitching yesterday. So we didn't finish grading, which I'm very sorry about. I hoped we'd finish grading, we could talk about the test today. We didn't though, so by policy we won't talk about the exam until it's graded. We really hope that will happen by Friday, assuming the glitches in the system will go away. So there's that. So, test two aside, are there any comments, questions, concerns, or other things to bring to me? Yes? When is the next homework due? All right, so homework 6 was originally going to come out today. It will actually come out tomorrow instead. Part of lab will be going over it and sort of planning out how that's going to happen. So it will be out tomorrow. We mostly have a write-up. We're just waiting for a few people to say, yes, this seems sane, before we stick it on all of you. If you happened to check the website for about 15 minutes during today, you got to see the write-up. It's no longer there. It'll come back tomorrow. Other questions? Yes?
When is it due?
When is it due? Hard questions. Let's see. Homework 6 is due April 23rd. So homework 6 will come out tomorrow, April 3rd. It'll be due April 23rd. They'll give you 20 days to work on it. It will be paired. Okay. Some things to know about this homework. It typically, and current plan is again, is somewhat less defined. So there's a general idea of what you want to do and a basic structure, where there'll be some freedom for you to do what you want to do. We typically also have some ability for you to do really cool things and us to give us a small amount of extra credit as a consequence. That remains probably true. We'll talk more about it though in lab tomorrow. Other questions? Okay. So, let's talk about what we're going to talk about today. Basically, we're going to do Chapter 8. We'll leave one section of Chapter 8 for Friday, and a few sections we've already done, and there's a few sections we aren't going to do. Usually, I can just say we do the chapters except the stuff with J-option pain. This time, it's a little bit mixed, so I actually have this guidelines, right? Okay. We already did 8.8, how this works. We're going to ignore 8.5, 8.6, 8.9, and 8.11. Some of them because they are tangential, and some of them because we don't really care, basically. I note why a few of them later on. So that leaves just these other sections. So we're going to talk about most of these other sections today. And the purpose of this chapter is to try to reinforce your understanding what's happening with classes under the hood and how you can use them in different ways. So some of these topics will be sort of overview. Some of them will be, we already knew that, didn't we? Some of them will be like a brief teaser of the appropriate vocabulary. If you want to learn more, take CS2110. So that's roughly speaking what we're going to do today. So let's start by talking about instance versus static members. We talked some about this in the review, more about it in the review than we did in class beforehand. So, instance versus static. First off, let's mention this word members. Okay. Fields and methods combined, all of them are called members. Any field, any method is a member of the class. Somebody wanted a nice name for that. Member is the one they came up with. It works, I guess. So a member might be static, it might not. If it's not static, we call it an instance member, an instance method or instance field. That vocabulary, I don't care particularly if you know that vocabulary, but it shows up in the book. You'll see it later in life as well. The basic idea, what should they have called static? In my opinion, the word static should have been the word shared. Okay? Static means it is shared by all members of the class. So the book has a nice example of this. Here's a different one. Let's suppose I had a chess piece class. Let's actually put this in code so it'll get syntax highlighted instead of doing it in here. So let me make myself a class. Chess P. peace. Okay? And in this class, now this won't quite compile because I got a bunch of dot, dot, dots here and there. But I'm going to say, what is interesting about a chess piece? What row and column it is sitting in, and how many pieces exist? Because when the pieces get down to zero, then you can't play the game. I don't know. We could use it as some sort of approximate way of telling how far along somebody is, but we might want to know how many chess pieces there are. The number of chess pieces that exist is not dependent on any particular chess piece, right? If I have two different chess pieces, they should always agree on how many chess pieces there are. So the piece count, it is shared between all of the chess piece objects that exist. But in Java, we spell shared static instead. I guess we just didn't know how to spell. Okay? So the things that are not static are not shared. The row and column of a particular chess piece is not shared between multiple chess pieces. But the count of chess pieces is shared between them. Okay? Similarly with methods. Constructing a chess piece, when I construct one chess piece, it should only affect that chess piece. It is not shared. Okay? It's not doing shared behavior. And similarly, moving a chess piece is not doing anything shared to the chess piece. As I move one chess piece, that chess piece moves. Okay? But some other things, like play chess, will be sort of a shared method. It isn't particular to any one chess piece. It sort of has to do with the whole idea of chess pieces in general. So we would make that also a shared method here, where we spell shared static. I was going to say more about this, but you asked a lot of these questions on the review last week. So anybody want me to say anything more about static? All right, as we look back at some of the homework assignments we've done in the past, if you think about even your very first homework assignment, you had one static method main in each of your classes. And that's because there was no idea of a non-shared thing. Right? So if we were to go back to the homework, and I'm going to have to log in for that. Hold on. Okay, so when we were doing our homework one, we had a class C2F, and it had only a public static void main inside of it. The main action was shared between all C2F objects. There were no C2F objects, okay, but it wasn't particular to a particular C2F object, so it was static. Well, that's pretty much the only kind of methods we saw was main until homework 5. Okay? And in homework 5, we have a colored maps class, inside of which are a bunch of shared methods. Okay? The ability to read a CSV file is shared between all colored maps we might want. Okay? There's nothing about reading a CSV file that's specific to one colored maps object as opposed to another. As a matter of fact, we didn't even have a constructor for our colored maps. We just used various display mechanisms to automatically pop things up using the scaling image and so on. Right? So these are all static because it doesn't depend on a particular object. However, in lab, you've done a couple of classes where you have non-shared things, okay? Where we have methods and fields that describe particular objects, so we don't use the word static there. All right, that really is everything I want to say about static, unless somebody has a question. But first, let me just get a general feel how we think about static. On a scale from 1, where I'm completely lost, to 5, I have mastered this topic. How comfortable are you with the word static? Okay. Mostly 4s and 5s, a few lower, okay? Great. Then I feel that's reasonably good. This is not a super important topic as topics go. So we have static. That's section 8.1 of the textbook. If you're a little fuzzy, I'd encourage you to read that and see what they have to say, okay? They also have a sort of a different description, and often a different point of view can help. The next thing we want to talk about is using classes as types. Okay? We've done some of this already. That's what classes are. How could you use them as anything else? But let's see what this looks like. All right, I'm going to change this actually from being... Oh, let's do this first. I'm just going to reuse this file because I don't really need it. So let's change this from being chess piece to, oh, how about Sports team. And I should spell that correctly. Ah, sports team works too. I should have an O right there. All right, so I'm going to model sports teams, okay? So each object of type sports team should represent one sports team. What are some interesting things about sports teams? Players. All right. So how many players are on a sports team?
One.
It varies, right? So let's make a list of them. Let's make an array list of players. We'll fill in this in a moment. Okay? One of the things I want to track about my sports team is the set of players that could exist. What is a good type to represent our players? Sorry, too many voices at once. Yes?
A string of names.
A string. Okay, so I could say the interesting thing about players is their names. So I can make this a string. And away we go, right? I import something, and I have now defined a sports team as being a list of strings, which implicitly means the players on the team. Now, last time I checked, people don't watch sports because of the names of the players. That is not the interesting thing about the people playing the game, right? There may be exceptions to this, right? There's probably some strange sport where you just have strange names. I don't know, right? But in general, this is not the interesting thing about players. It is sufficient in most cases to distinguish between them, but it's not everything I want to know. So one of the things, it's an important concept, is I can, if I don't have a type I like, I can just make up a new one. Players are more than names, they are more than numbers, they are more than lists, they are not any of the things I have built in. So I'm just going to assume there exists this new class called player. I don't know what it looks like yet, so I better define it. Okay? So I can either tell Java to start defining it for me, but I'll just make a new class called player. Okay, I need to describe what a player is. All right, so what's interesting things about a player? Well, we said already the string name is interesting. What else might be interesting about a player?
Number.
Sorry?
Number.
Number. Oh, yeah, most sports, your players have numbers. Okay? I think they're always integer. I don't think I've ever seen a sport where you're number 37.8. Okay? So they have names, they have numbers. We could put other things in here, right? Height and weight and position and batting averages and number of whatevers, right? We could put in more stuff depending on what type of player they are. But the nice thing here is now I have a way of modeling players where if I decide I want to know more about my players, nothing about my sports team has to change. I've sort of separated the idea of the player from the idea of the team. And by doing this, I can describe players however I want to describe players. I can derive teams as sets of players. And I can tweak them pretty much to my heart's content to have happen what I want to have happen. I should make all these private. So let me go ahead and do that. Okay. And while I'm doing that, questions about this idea of sports teams and players, sports teams being made out of players. Nope. Okay. This is an important idea. Moving from thinking of how do I break down the world into pieces Java already has, to how do I break down the world into logical pieces and telling Java what they mean, is an important step in being able to write larger programs. So we can do that. There is a name for this in Java and in programming in general. They call this aggregation, when one class is defined in terms of another class. I don't really care about the phrase. The book goes on about it in some length. Whatever. Hey. But it is important to understand that we can do this, and we can keep going, right? Because player is currently defined in terms of string, which is another class. Okay, and I could put in more things here. I can even do really odd things, like saying player. We could say a player has another player, mentor. Okay, if you have a very pleasant team where they assign mentors to each new player, then each player might come in with another player that is their mentor. And so now I define players in terms of other players, and there cannot be a first player, right? Because every player needs a mentor. This may not make a lot of sense logically, but for Java, this works just fine. Okay? I can define players in terms of other players. So let's actually take a moment and draw pictures of what that looks like. If this is still working. All right. So, the idea is that I have said, let's just do a quick little UML diagram of our player, okay? So we say that every player has a string name, and it also has a player mentor. Okay? And then there are probably some methods, and we'll worry about the methods later. I'm not overly concerned with the methods. Okay? What does one of these things look like when we create it in memory, right? So suppose I were to go along and I were to actually create a player object, so I were to make player P equals a new player, right? Set it up somehow, do some stuff to it, and then I want to draw a picture of P and the memory that's going on here. What do I see? Well, I'm going to see my player P. It is going to point over to a player object. Okay? We have defined that every player has two fields in it, a name and a mentor. So there's going to be a name field and a mentor field, which I'll abbreviate for interest of space. Both of those are class types, so they are going to just have references to where I can find the values. Right? So this is going to point off to the name of this player, which is going to be Alice. Okay? And this one is going to point to whoever this player's mentor was, which is another player object. Okay? And that mentor is also a player, so it will also have a name and a mentor. And its name, I don't know, who do we think Alice's mentor was?
Mad Madigan.
Okay, M.M. Right? And M.M. also had a mentor. And so on and so forth. Right? And how many different player objects do I have in order to finish representing this? Well, it actually turns out I can stop whenever I want. Okay? So I make a name and a mentor, and let's say this person's name is X. And X, it turns out, has no mentor. The mentor field is null. Okay? Anytime we have an object, we can put null to mean there isn't one. And so we can just say the first two players have mentors, the third one doesn't have a mentor. Where it would normally store who its mentor was, it stores nothing at all instead. It has a null there. Okay? So under the hood, Java doesn't care that we have players defined in terms of players, because it's going to store each player separately. And so the fact that they're defined in terms of each other doesn't matter to Java. And it allows us to represent an idea that might make sense in our context. Questions? Okay. So classes can be made up of other classes. And we can handle these in various ways. It turns out that having classes made up of themselves is a big topic in computing. And if you continue on in the course, you'll see a bit more of this in 2110 and a lot of it in 2150. Okay, a very important idea. What can we store by letting things refer to themselves? We're just going to hit it fairly in passing, sort of to understand how that works. But the idea that when I define a class, I can define in terms of other classes is an important one. The textbook also talks a bit about how we can use classes in other settings. Okay, so if I have my player class, let's actually get rid of the mentor for the moment. Okay, I have my player class and my sports team class. I can use player or sports team as both the both the parameters and return types of methods, right? So I can have a player get fastest runner. Okay? So I make a method that returns the fastest runner on the sports team, which I have no idea who that is. Let's just say return players dot get. I have no idea. Let's say the fastest runner is always in the first position. It's a silly thing to say, but it lets me write the method. Okay? Maybe I store the players in order of how fast they run. In general, I want to make this method more interesting and actually store speed, which means I need to store the speed of runners in the player object and so on. Okay? But I can have the return type be an object I defined. I can also have the parameter be an object I've defined. Okay, so I can make a public void method recruit. Okay? So I can recruit a new player, which let's just say right now just adds that new player. Okay? So anywhere we can use a type, return type, parameter type, variable, field, wherever we want to use it, we're welcome to use a class we defined. Or class Java defined, or primitive, they're all good. Java treats them all in a similar way. Okay? One other thing to know about this as we're going along, okay? As we're writing these classes, there's a problem with this code as currently written. I can never actually use this sports team to do anything. And the reason I can never write the sports team to do anything is there is no way of setting the player's array list to have a value. When I create an object by default, all the fields get zero, false, or null. So the player's array list will be null. If I were to try to say null.getZero, I will get a null pointer exception. You cannot ask null to do something because null is a nothing. It doesn't exist. So it's very important when you're writing classes to make sure you have a constructor that gives a value to all of the fields. Okay? So I always want to make a constructor that's going to set the players to a new array list of players. Okay? While I'm at it, let's clean up these. Okay? I always want to do this. Now, if I were to use this class in code somewhere, all of my methods would at least, in theory, make sense. I may still have an error if I try to get the fastest runner while there is nobody on the team. But at least I won't get a null pointer exception and I don't know why, right? I did my basic duty. I set up all of the fields to have values in my constructor. And having done that, I am free to move on with my life and use my methods however I want. I can also make as many constructors as I want. Okay? So I can make another sports team that accepts, let's say, a player. The first player. Okay? And I could add that player to my list. I can make another one that takes two players, another one takes three players, and one takes a player and a team name, and one takes just a team name, and so on and so forth. Yes? So why couldn't why couldn't I use the recruit method? I can. Okay? So I could do this, or I could say this dot recruit first player. Why could I not use recruit if I don't have a constructor? Okay, let's find out. So let me just briefly get rid of those and let me make a main method right here so we can see it. I could certainly make this main method in a different class if I wanted, but because it's static, it doesn't really matter a great deal where I put it. Okay? What is it complaining about? Did I do something wrong? Oh, thank you, args. All right, so I make a main method. What do I want to do? I want to make a sports team team equals a new sports team. Right? Make a team. And then your thought is, couldn't I use the recruit method anyway? Team, oh, well, I'll have to make a player to do that. Player, player equals new player. Team dot recruit player. Okay? Java will compile this code. It has no, doesn't see any errors with it. It won't run though. Why not? What's wrong? Okay? I run this code and I get a null pointer exception. Ah. Get that back. Get a null pointer exception. And where does that happen? It happens on line 18. Right here. Why am I getting a null pointer exception? Let's draw a picture. So why am I getting a null pointer exception in this particular instance? Well, what did I do? I created a team called team, okay, which points off to a sports team. And if I don't have any constructor, it's going to set up all the fields to zero, false, or null. So in particular, there's only one field in my sports team. It's players. And it has to put in that either zero, false, or null. Zero and false don't make sense for ArrayList, so it puts in there null. I then make my player. And I make it into a new player. For this purposes, we don't actually care what goes in those boxes. Okay. It'll be null and zero, but that's not important for this particular example. The next thing I do is I say team.recruit. And the team.recruit method is going to call players.add. But players is null, and dot means follow the arrow. There is no arrow to follow. It cannot do players.anything. Okay? So inside my recruit method, I had this.players.add. New one. That was the basically the whole method. Okay? When I invoke that method, this will make sense. This will be the object on which I invoke the method. This dot will follow the arrow over to the team object. This dot players represents the box that I currently have a null in. This dot players dot doesn't work. So I never even get to add because there is nothing in the player's box to dot. Yes?
So the whole box is null, it's not like a null ArrayList?
Yes. The variable players has a value of null.
So it's not like an ArrayList yet?
It is not yet an ArrayList. It is something we could store an ArrayList in, but we haven't created an ArrayList yet. So I define players as an ArrayList. Or more precisely, I define players as an ArrayList field. Okay? A field is like a variable. It's a place I could store something. I am capable of storing an ArrayList of player in that variable. But I'm not until I say, create a new list and put it in that box.
What if you did like the new ArrayList
player? If I did it right on that line? If I did this here or here? Right here. Say new ArrayList right here. You can do that, and sometimes it will work, but sometimes it won't. And I don't really want to go into the details of why not. It is wiser to put it in a constructor. Other questions about this example? All right, since we spent a little time talking about null, I'm curious how we feel about null. Let's do the 1 to 5 fingers again. How do we feel about null? Okay. Similar. Null was in chapter 6. If you're confused about null, you're welcome to go back and look at chapter 6. I think it was 6.3. I could be wrong about that. It just means there's nothing there. I'm not talking about anything. All right. Let's actually just do one more quick example about null. Let's say a person. Okay, I'm going to make a generic person class, but what I'm going to choose to model about a person is their boss. Okay, I'm going to say that people can have bosses. And so if you work for somebody, your boss value will point to that person. Okay? So for example, in the front row here, we have one of our TAs, Jim. He works for me. His boss value would point to me. Okay? I am his boss, so I get... So in that sense, there's... If we were to look at the Jim object, we would see the boss variable points to me. Okay? If I were to fire Jim, his boss value would go to null. I didn't go away, he didn't go away, but the connection between us vanished. And any sort of action that would require Jim to talk to his boss wouldn't work if he didn't have a boss. Okay? When I first create a person, as anybody who's watched birthing knows, there is no boss. Right? So when I create a new object, the fields get null. There is no boss when you create a new person. If you want to get a boss, you have to set it later. This is in general true of how Java works. When you have a field that is of an object type, initially it gets null, and if you want to be something other than null, you have to explicitly set it to something. And you have to have created that thing before you can. Okay? So with our sports team, we had a list of players. Just like the boss, that's an object type. You have to make one before it exists. Until you make one, there isn't one to talk about. And until you assign the variable with the equal sign, as we do right here, until you assign the value of players to be something, it's null. We don't have a list of players. We could, but we don't even have the list. It's not just an empty list, it doesn't exist. I don't know if that helped or not. Yes? Could I make the new ArrayList in main? In this one instance, I could, because my main method is also inside my sports team class. But in general, it would not work because the ArrayList is private, and so I cannot assign to it outside of this class. Okay. Even though I can do it in main, I don't want to. Right? I want to set up the list of players each time I create a new sports team. That should be part of constructing the object. So the right place in sort of a conceptual idea is in the constructor. Right? You make a sports team, it should have a list of players that probably starts off empty or maybe starts off with things in it. But everyone should have it every time you create it. So the constructor is the right place to do that. Other questions about this example or in general? Okay. Using classes as types. Now we're going to back up a little bit and talk a little about how Java works, just a little bit how it works under the hood. We'll see some more of this on Friday, okay? When I make an object in Java, it is going to give me a lot of stuff for free. Every object gets a set of methods that I did not define. And we can actually see that. If I were to go down here and say team dot, I would see it's got the players array list, and it's got the recruit method that I wrote, and the get fastest runner. It's got all this other stuff too. It's got clone and equals and finalize and get class and hash code and notify all and toString and wait. And there's more still. Another wait and another wait. Okay? And I didn't write any of those methods. What do they do? Okay? It's not immediately obvious what most of them do, and we're not going to talk about most of them. But the idea is that Java wants to say, no matter what your object is, there's some things that make sense to have every object be able to do. I should be able to tell if one object is equal to another. I should be able to print out an object. I should be able to attach it to a string. Some of these other things like hash code, you're like, what is that? And you're welcome to learn about it in 2150. There are some operations that are not immediately obvious their value, but really enable us to do interesting things with objects later on. So there's some of these things like notify, wait, and hash code that are just sort of there for some of those more advanced purposes. But we give every object gets all of these for free. Now, usually, what these things do is not what I want them to do. Okay, so let's make a string S equals team.toString. So one of the methods every class gets is toString. We've seen this briefly before, but we're going to talk more about how it works now. Println S. Okay. So I can invoke the toString method on team. I did not write the toString method. I got it for free because every object gets it for free. Okay? And I can print out that string to see what my team's string is. And I see this garbage. We've seen this garbage before, right? The name of the class, an at sign, and what's called a hex code, where this object is located in memory. And that other number will change every time I run my program. Okay? So I run it again and again. I will get different numbers in general. I might get the same one over and over again. It actually all depends on my operating system. Windows sort of decides where this happens. Okay? I don't have control over it. Usually that's not how I want to represent my sports teams. Although it make for very interesting looking sports pages in the paper, if that's how we represent sports teams, it's not usually how we actually want to do that. Okay? Similarly, the equals method, by default, only says if it's exactly the same object, which is probably not what we want equals to do. And there's a clone method, so it's return a copy of an object, but doesn't. And there's other methods that are provided that do the wrong thing by default. So an important idea in Java is this idea that I can override the default behavior. Java gives me something that happens by default. For example, it's similar to the idea that when I create an object, by default all the fields get zero, false, or null. But I can sort of change them after the fact. There's also the idea that every object by default gets a toString method, it does something, and I can change that behavior. Okay? So if I want to change the behavior, I write a public string toString method, and I can make it do whatever I want. That'll work. Okay? If I write my own toString method, Java will use my toString method instead of the one it provided. Okay? And so now all sports teams will be printed out as Okay? Probably not the sanest thing I could possibly do. But I can also do... I can take advantage of the fact that every object has a toString method to do things like make my toString method take advantage of the toString method of other classes. So the plus sign invokes toString when I add to a string. This is great. Okay? So I can just say team plot plus this dot players. Implicitly that means the same thing as team dot plus this dot players dot toString. Means the same thing. And this will use the ArrayList toString method, which under the hood will use the player toString method. So I could then go write a toString method for my players, and then I'd start getting a reasonable representation of what's going on. The name of this behavior in Java is called overrides. Okay? A method overrides another method if the method was available by default and we change what it does. You are optionally allowed to put that directly in your code with an at sign thing. You don't need to, okay? But this is available. As you're moving into homework 6, you'll be writing your own classes. They will be big and ugly at some point until you figure out how to write them simply. You will want to be able to print them out. Trust me, you will. So one of the first things you're going to want to do when you write any class is to add a toString method that shows you what's going on. Okay? Gives you that information. If you need to compare them to one another, you can add an equals method. If you need to copy them, you can add a clone method. The book talks a little about how you can do that. It gets it slightly wrong. It glosses over some details. They are probably right to gloss over the details. You can learn the details in 2110. But I'm not going to go into the details right now. If you need to do that, you can. But toString, very important. Because I am changing a method that existed, I have to do it exactly the same way. Okay? I am not allowed to make a method called toString that does not do the toString thing. It must return a string. That's what toString does. I'm not allowed to make it return an int. Because Java expects that I'm changing the one I got only in the return type value, not in any of the type or the private publicness or that sort of thing. Okay. So we have toString. Any questions about how to write classes, null, this, constructors, multiple versions of the same method within parameters, multiple constructors? Yes?
I was just wondering, you have the field declare that's the number. What if you set that equal to like the place that it is, like in the team?
Ah.
That was possible?
Okay, yeah, so let's actually flesh this out. So the question is, could I set the number of my player to the position of the player in the team? I absolutely can. I have to do that in a constructor, okay? So I want to initialize my player. When I create a player, I should probably give my player a name. That makes sense. Okay? And I probably want to initialize the name of this player to equal the name. When I make a new player, what number should it get? Who knows, right? I'm making a generic player who isn't even on a team yet. Let's just pick a number. Let's say that players that aren't on teams are going to be player number -1. Okay? This is silly. You don't ever see a player -1 running around on the field. But it points out to us this player is not yet on a field, or not yet on a team. We haven't set their number. Okay? The other thing we're going to need to do is once they get added to a team, we're going to have to change their number. Okay? So let's make a public void set number method that will allow us to change the number of this player. Okay? So initially my number is -1. It makes no sense, but at least it tells me something that I'm not on the team and I did think about it. Okay? And I can change that number later. I'm also going to make a public toString method so that I can print these things out. I always make toString methods. Okay? Public string toString method. And how shall I represent a player? How about return this dot name plus number okay. I'm going to print out the name and the number of the player in parentheses with the number in front of it. That's how I've decided to represent my players. We can change that later, but it gives me information about how the player looks. Okay? So I've done this. Now, over here in my other method, creating a player doesn't work anymore. Oh, I should undo the stuff I did here. Okay? Creating a player doesn't work anymore because I have to give every player a name. What's the name of my player? Hobbs. Okay. So right now my method creates a player named Hobbs, adds it to my team. I print out my team and I see my team has one player on it, a player named Hobbs, number -1. But your question was, can I change it so it is not -1, so it is where I am in the team? And I absolutely can. I do that when I recruit the player. So I recruit the player. Then the other thing I want to do is tell my player what their new number is. And what's their new number? It would be the size of the players list. Okay? So now I recruit Hobbs and Hobbs becomes -1 instead of -1. I can make myself a new player. I'll even reuse this variable. So I have Hobbs, I might as well have Calvin to go with him. Okay? And I can recruit Calvin. And now I will see that my team consists of Hobbs, who is -1, and Calvin, who is -2. I could have used a different technique to figure out what number to give my player, right? I could have done any math there I wanted. I could have looked up the list of retired numbers for this team and so on to pick the number I wanted to do. But the idea is, when I recruit it, I also want to set its number, okay? So this sort of interplay between different classes, there's multiple ways to do it. I could have made instead a method in the player class where I give it to the team and it figures out where it needs to be. Okay? I could have put this in different places. But it's important to realize this depends on two classes. The idea that my number on the team depends on both the team and the number. And so wherever I put it, I'm going to have to access to both a team and a player in order to make that work. Other questions? If any. Yes? Can I invoke a method while writing the method itself? Is that the question? Sure, let's do that, okay? Let's say, oh, toString. How about return this.toString? Okay, Java will be perfectly happy for this method until I try to run it. When I try to run it, the whole world's going to break. Why is the whole world going to break? Let's turn to your neighbor, see if you can agree on why you think this method will cause things to break when I run it. Okay? Breaks. I don't think it breaks. I have no idea what this method does. All right, I will run it in a moment, but first I'm going to draw a picture, okay? So let me come over to my picture drawing computer. And draw a picture. All right, so the idea is we're going to run the toString method. Okay? I'm running the toString method. When the toString method comes into existence, it gets its parameters added. There are none. It also always gets this. Okay? So I'm going to say the first time it runs, this has some, it points off to some team. I don't know what team. Okay? This happens before I start running the method. And then what's the first thing this method does? Okay? Let's remind ourselves of what our method looks like. We have the entirety of the method is return toString. Sorry, return this.toString. Okay? So, what do I do first? Can I return or do I have to invoke first? I have to invoke first? So the first thing I do when invoking toString is invoke toString. Alright, so I'm going to invoke toString. Because that's the first thing I need to do to run this method. The new toString is going to have the same this as the old one. This one gets starting to run, and the first thing it needs to do is invoke toString. So it's going to invoke toString with this. Okay? And each one of these activation records, each of these little memories for toString is going to be stacked on top of another. Okay? I'm going to keep hiding the previous memory. And this new toString gets the first thing it has to do. Invoke toString. And then this one is going to have to invoke toString. And so on. Okay? Because how I describe this method, if we think of a method as a how-to description, a recipe, this is like saying having a recipe. How to make apple pie. Step one, make apple pie. It doesn't terminate. So Java will just keep running it literally until it cannot fit any more two strings in memory. Okay? So if we look at this here for a moment, we will see that it manages to create, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 or so copies of the two-string memory before it literally runs out of memory on my computer, cannot put any more on there. And then it blows up. Okay? If you make a method that invokes itself, you can do that. We will talk the next to last week of the semester, we'll talk about how to do this correctly, but usually it's the wrong thing to do. Okay, that's the time we have for today. I will see you all on Friday.